Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, 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 and welcome, ladybirds and gentle lemurs, to the Human Nature podcast. Here we explore the ups and downs of being Homo sapiens and learn a thing or two on how to be a better animal. My name is Elliot Connor, and I'm at least half elephant. But the star of our show today is none other than Bootsy, a French magician, CEO of Keeps, a 3-time TEDx speaker and author. Welcome, Bootsy.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm glad to be here. Looking forward to see what we're going to talk about.
So, magic is your thing, and we haven't had a magician on the show yet, which is interesting. I'm certainly keen to talk about that passion of yours and how it's turned into a career as well. How you're now writing about the effects of magic, that way of thinking, on our productivity, on our workflows. But I'm sure we'll get to that. Let's start with what you define as magic. What is magic to you? Because I think in the modern era, it's such a wide scope of endeavor. So how do you see magic as a part of your life?
Well, magic has changed a lot for sure over the centuries, and even very recently. If you look at magic in the 80s, it's very different from what it is today. And I think in a good way, it's stronger magic. It's less of a cheesy thing that you do with handkerchief and foam stuff. There are definitely stronger effects, definitely more magicians, definitely more female magicians, which is good as well, because it's a world with a huge ego, a lot of guys who thinks they know better than others. So there's a lot of that as well. But definitely I think it's an interesting craft, because not only for what it brings you, obviously many disciplines can bring you a lot of things, self-confidence and talking in front of others and stuff like that, but mostly for others, you know. You mentioned some people don't have a career out of it, and I always say, you know, good, I don't care. It's even maybe better, because they do tricks for their kids or for their nephews, and they just do it for others. So that's actually not what I like magic at the beginning, to be honest. I started magic late. It wasn't when I was young. I was 20 when I discovered, not when I started, when I discovered magic. I was 20, really in a cafe in Paris. And it was actually a cafe where the waiters were also magicians. So they did a couple of tricks to us. We were with friends, and I had a lot of free time because I was going to university, and I had, you know, I could get by without working too much at university, so I had a lot of free time on my hands. And what I liked was not necessarily the effect, but how they did it. So the guy said, oh, he was a smart guy. He also sold his DVDs at the end of the thing, and we all bought one DVD. I'm like, yeah, we're gonna learn magic. And what I really liked was the mindset behind. So, long answer to your short question. There are two things that I love in magic: is the effect, what it gives to others, this moment of magic, this moment out of time that we create, and to the magician is the mindset when you discover the illusion. You're like, wow, there's another magical effect when you discover the how it's done, basically.
Definitely. No, I think that's a wonderful answer. And clearly, over the course of your career, spanning ages, several decades even, how have you found it as a magician performing across the world, essentially? So clearly you've traveled, you've worked, I believe, in Hollywood's Magic Castle. I believe you taught magic briefly in London for several years. So there are many different audiences, cultures, expectations even of you as a magician. I guess performing to would-be magicians may even be harder than perhaps your average audience. But I'm interested, what is the most interesting or hardest gig you've ever done?
Oh, that's so many. You know, when you start a career in anything, you have to do some work that you don't choose at the beginning. You know, you don't have many choices at the beginning. So when I started professionally, I would take anything. I need a magician. Yeah. I would say, yes, I don't even know what it is. You know, I did just wanted experience, which was great. But you have three questions in one question. So I need to address a couple of them. First of all, the different audiences. I love to talk about this because we often say that the French audience is one of the worst in the world because we're very skeptical, very analytical. So imagine an audience who just watch your hands and wants to see how it's done and they don't want to enjoy themselves. They just look, I know there is something. No shit. Of course, there's something. Of course, there is a trick. But, you know, they don't enjoy themselves and they don't let it go, which is cliche, but it has a lot of truth. It's completely opposite of the American audience. And if you watch the clip in the Hollywood Magic Castle, the guy is just announcing me. I haven't even started. People don't know me. They have never seen me in their lives. It's just say, hey, we have someone from Paris, and people are already cheering. They're like, yeah, woohoo, yeah, magic, Paris. So they're already in the experience, and I think it's part of the culture. It's not that they're not well intentioned, you know, it's just how it is. And then you have a scope of very different audiences and of course, different type of personalities and circles and communities, of course, but different countries are definitely you see the difference directly. And French people, it's very hard. It's very hard. It's a good school for pulling them into this magical experience. And sometimes if you just succeed to have them doubt just 1 second and be like, oh, and you, then to come back to reality as fast as possible, then you already won. You're like, oh, well, you know, at least I made you travel to this wonderland for half a second. I'm happy already. So exaggerated a little bit, but definitely the hardest were some of the events that were community oriented, like bar mitzvah or stuff like that. I mean, I did some of them. They were wonderful. People were happy and it was a lot of noise and stuff, but it was very lively. But I did others. And it was a nightmare, man. It was a nightmare because they didn't care that you were there and kids running anywhere, that there was no discipline. If they're running towards my magic stuff that cost a lot of money, so I had to grab them like, no, and ask parents to not be as loud so they could respect the show. So it was, you know, when there is absolutely no respect and you feel like you're here and you're a ghost and people running, this is super hard because you feel like, why am I here? And one of my mentors, Jeff McBride, that I love, is super funny and he's very well respected in the magical world. So he said, when we were asking him about how to do in such experiences, such events, he would say TFM. I was like, what TFM? He said, take the fucking money. He said, take the fucking money and go. And obviously he's not about that. He's about amazing experiences is great, but sometimes you can't do it. Sometimes it's just impossible, you know? So you cannot have everyone sit in front of you. And in this case, it's a job. Some of the things are horrible and you just TFM and that's it. And hope for the best.
Certainly. Now, I think it's, as you say, a very, very varied mixed gig. working as a magician, and obviously across many different countries, contexts, different stages. And I believe the animal you've chosen to talk about today is a fox, which is similarly widespread, similarly looked upon with very mixed reactions by society. Just before we came onto this recording, actually, I was reading about fox tossing. Have you heard about fox tossing?
No, what is it?
So fox tossing is a 17th century sport, which I believe was actually quite popular in the day across mainland Europe and across the UK. But essentially it involved, as the name would suggest, putting a fox in a sling, shooting it high up into the air. And yeah, such was the sport.
No way.
It really just goes to show how much society's changed, how much our perspectives have changed. But I believe even in France, foxes are quite widely disputed as an issue. I was over in the south of France at the start of last year doing some wildlife rescue work. And they've got quite stringent regulations about where you can even release rehabilitated foxes, because obviously the hunting laws are different between different areas. The wildlife populations can vary dramatically, and some provinces will be perfectly okay with foxes. They'll love them, whereas others, not so much. Yeah, I think foxes are fascinating. But do you want to give us some background about your choice? What interests you about foxes?
I don't know. It's on some level, I admire some traits they have. The way we describe them, obviously, we say they're clever. And on some part, I also identify with them in the sense that they're calm. Just when you see a fox, is not all over the place, it's calm, he's looking, and he shows by result, you know. I like that. You just see one morning that some other animals are dead, and there's like a missing, like a chicken or two missing, and you're like, ah, that must be the fox, you know. He doesn't tell you about it, he just know his stuff, methodology comes and goes, stuff are missing, you're like, fuck, that must be a fox. And I think I like the fact that they're clever and they have this reputation also of, so I was supposed to look at this word before. I'm going to look at it right now. It's a French word. The word is roublard. So it's kind of a wily, crafty, you know,
okay, yeah,
clever. And the way it's translated on the website I'm looking at right now, it's wily old fox, crafty old fox. That's very funny. That's very funny. So I didn't choose by accident, because I always like to find another solution, another way to do things. And, you know, that's what I like about this animal. But obviously, I don't know much about it. It's just what I heard, what I've seen, what I imagine, basically.
Yeah, well, you're spot on in many respects. As you say, they're cage hunters, is what it's called. So you mentioned them raiding chicken houses. They'll take two or three chickens, and what they do is they bury them. So they store their spare food, which is, yeah, very clever. It allows them to have these larders, effectively, when times are lean. But they're also very easily tamed. So you mentioned about people having this sometimes positive reaction to them. They seem very calm, very approachable, I guess. There have been cases, I believe in Russia, a few decades back, it was quite popular. Late 20th century to domesticate them and effectively have them as dogs. But being foxes, they are the most widespread wild carnivore on Earth, most likely the most abundant as well. So incredibly, incredibly successful.
You know, they also do their thing. They're not like, they're by themselves. You see them, they're just here, they're just not there. They just do what they need to do by themselves. They don't bother other people, you know. I like that as well. That's what I think I identify. It's not necessarily the clever thing that I identify with. It's more of they do what they need to do by themselves, and they just, yeah, you know.
Certainly. They have that solitary tendency in hunting, and they make the most horrendous noises when they come together. The famous screams of fox cubs and vixen. They definitely prefer in many ways that solitary lifestyle, but still living in family groups. So there is that sense of community, which is interesting, having those two mixed together. Foxes are famously opportunists. They do is really thrive in these altered habitats, suburbs of human settlements, by eating just about anything. They are so resourceful. That thriftiness has enabled them to reach where they are today. In the book I've been writing, Human Nature, which hoping to publish soon, I describe humans as opportunistic ecosystem engineers, meaning that we are thrifty troublemakers. We're really good at adapting, really good at working with what we have, but we also change the spaces around us. And foxes clearly take after those traits too. So that's really interesting to consider as well. But I'm keen also to hear about this book you've recently published, being The Magic of Crazytivity, as you call it, this new coinage, which I love, Crazytivity. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, I always admired entrepreneurs and magicians and all kinds of artists that had this crazy spark in them. And I always looked up to them thinking, how do they do it to be so successful and to build this and to create that? And I always, yes, they're creative for sure, but they're also bold. You know, they have this little thing where as an outsider, you have to say, wow, this is crazy. You know, that's what I liked. And I thought, you know, crazy and creativity together would make a great word. Then I saw it already existed. So I cannot even say I invented it. I just put it together. But I say, yeah, you know what? It describes my concept better than anything else, because I think the magician mindset when they create an illusion is very, very close to that. It's kind of a crazy creative thing. You think it's impossible, and magician think, it is impossible unless, and that's kind of the one of the words that I put forward in the book and in my talks, is unless, you know, nothing is impossible, or maybe it is, unless you do this, unless you do that. And we also come back on the resourceful, foxy mindset, if I can say so. That's what I wanted to put forward. And I was already a keynote speaker, and I thought it'd be great to write a book. I had a lot in my mind, and it's always the same. You start writing, then you cut in your own game, you continue to write. And, not only I could express what I already had in mind, but I could also structure many things that I had in my mind that weren't really structured and thought through, really. So it really helped me with that. And my aim was to do some kind of little toolkit where you can open the book anywhere and you arrive on the page. You just can have a shot of inspiration of one or two little pages, and then you can close it later, or you can read it back to back. That was my aim. I hope I succeeded. Normally, if you open it anywhere, you can have this shot of inspiration. And the book is about the 7 magician secrets to be more creative and innovative.
Great. Yeah, definitely for our audience, check out that book of Bootsy's. I think there's so much we can learn from that mindset, from that psychology. I find myself being very passionate, driven about nature and about conservation. That's something which has profoundly changed my perspective. So I certainly believe there's an element of that in everyone's life calling. So I'm really keen to hear more. Bootsy, I might ask you very shortly about maybe a moment where this magic background of yours, performing as a magician, has profoundly changed the way you look at the world. One of those aha moments, those eureka moments you've experienced. So the cicadas, where we are, have just emerged. They've come out for the spring, for the summer season. They are absolutely deafening at midday in the trees. Often they can cover them completely. And it reminded me of the magic cicadas, as they're called. So having that magic link, but these are the prime number cicadas. And when I first heard about them, that blew my mind because, yeah, these are cicadas which only emerge in prime number years. You may have heard about them. They're found in areas of North America. And yeah, it's this ingenious strategy they have to evade predation. But they have invented effectively this numeric system. They've worked out what these prime numbers are so that they can emerge after 7 or 13 years to be able to not be predictable and to be able to all emerge en masse so that predators don't have time to pick off too many of them, or so that the predators can't increase in number shortly before they emerge, so that they could devastate these cicada populations. But I found that really interesting. And the other thing I remembered at the same time was the word abracadabra. Do you know where that word originates from?
I knew and I forgot. Tell me again, because I want to know again.
Yes, so abracadabra, which I didn't know, was first used as a magic word to ward off malaria, which, yeah, okay. you wouldn't have thought that, would you? Same as, I guess, quinine in tonic water, a similar purpose. When these diseases were rife, and malaria still is in many ways, but again, it reflects on our current situation with COVID. Abracadabra is a word perhaps we could do more of, hopefully. There you go. Yeah, so tell me, what is one time for you, magic obviously being your passion, when that has changed the way you look at the world, changed the way maybe you go about your life, or the way you look at other people?
I think it's maybe more on the connection between people, because I was a close-up magician. So for people who don't know what a close-up magician is, a close-up, so magic with the, you know, cards and coins when you're very close and people can touch them. And usually it's not on contrary of stage magic, if I can say so. And so yeah, I was very in contact with people, and yeah, there was, my thing was really about connection. And most of my work, I was going from group to group and tried to do some magic for 5 minutes and at the same time understand the dynamic of the group and the different connections in the group, so I can better manage them. I can better see who's the leader of the group. So it's less of a aha moment that is linked to a magical moment where I see nature or the world like you do and say, wow, it's so magical. It's more of I can better see the connections between people and between me and the different people. But definitely there was also an element of thinking that magic is not what people think, that some people think it is. Let me be more precise. Some people try to argue like, yeah, but there is always a trick. And that has, I never try to make other people believe that there is some real magic, like some guy can put your hands over a super profound wound and suddenly you healed. That's, I don't believe in that, and I don't think it's possible, and like 100% of magicians, I think. But there is another kind of magic, which is the magic of creating a moment that is out of time. So yeah, there is both of those sides, the side of like, oh, now I understand more of the connections and dynamics in different groups and the social interaction. And on the other side is like, there is something magical that we can create, that me, a human, I come with a deck of cards and in 3 minutes, I create a bubble. I create an imaginary bubble and people play along and they say, okay, let's just put all of our beliefs on the side and imagine that this is a moment that is really magical. That is crazy if you think about it. And it has been said that the beginnings of magic were coming from shamans and in a long time ago. And I read some very interesting things that some shamans that were doing some rituals, there were healing rituals or stuff like that. There was actually a story that I loved. They were in a tent, basically, and there were a group sitting and they had some kind of ritual. And actually there was a guy who was shaking the tent. So it looked like, you know, it was a kind of a magical thing when you put your hands like that and you concentrate and things move and the tent is like shaking. What? But actually what was interesting is that in those writings, they said that the guy was not even hiding. So everyone could see he was shaking the tent. So that means they were playing along. They were thinking, you know, whatever, it's part of the game. You know, we pretend not to look at the trick. So it's not about the trick. It's not about, oh, does it really exist? Does the tent really shake? No, it's about whatever. It's we create this moment together. And so we can better enter this trance or this whatever they were trying to do and heal and be in the moment. So I think that's very interesting because it's not about the trick. It's about the moment. And that goes beyond magic. It goes beyond the art, the craft of magic. You can create your own moments. You put a candle, you put a, you know, you put your thing, you do whatever you need to do, and you can create a moment that looks, that is kind of a magical moment.
Certainly. As you say, it's about creating that experience, that moment, that a belief in the audience so that they can have that escape from the humdrum of reality, especially in COVID times where that is particularly unflattering. But I think it's a great tip as a magic trick on your next camping trip. If you want to rope in a friend to shake your tent, your shaman. I think it's brilliant. Fired. Yes, but as you say, this principle of magic, being able to suspend others' disbelief is so, so powerful. And in many ways, it surpasses that field itself. So one of the many ways in which it can be seen is in medicine, actually. So we have placebo effects, and you can go from anywhere between homeopathy to actually clinically tested medicines trials, which still have quite a major component of belief in what the doctor's doing, which means the patient will try and heal themselves. They'll try and put themselves back together. I found an interesting use for foxes in that context. And according to Pliny the Elder, who's a very famous Roman historian, scientist, writer, naturalist, he recommended fox genitals as a cure for the medical condition of headaches. So, yes, you had to, I believe, apply them to the brow, and that would make your headache go away. So if you ever run out of paracetamol, you know what to use now. Sure, it works a treat, but yes.
Poor foxes, they didn't ask for anything. And suddenly one guy said the testicle is good, is a good way to heal. What the hell?
As you say, I think it's a bit unfair on the foxes, but that is the way of things. But I don't know, would you rather be castrated or tossed in 17th century Europe?
Well, that's the only two choices you have. That's sad.
anyway. Well, Bootsy, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. I'm sure our audience will agree. You've taken us on a journey with your magic and talking about foxes as well with your knowledge. So I think I'd just like to say on behalf of everyone listening, thank you very much for coming on the show. We'll be back with another episode of the Human Nature Cast next week. Until then, stay safe and do try and be a better animal. Thank you all and goodbye. Hey there, just wanted to do a shout out to an amazing podcast you should definitely check out. Misfigured Life is an educational podcast that respects your time and absolutely nothing else. Realistic steps to accomplish projects and tasks, explained like you're just a little bit special and in less time than it takes other shows to even get to the point. Hosted by Parker, it covers wildly varying topics from robbing a bank to growing a garden and everything in between. Stop ignoring the background banter podcasts and learn something you could actually use. At least one new episode comes out each week, which days specifically will be a surprise. Probably subscribe or something. That's Misfigured Life.